Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I have Michael Abramoff here with me, and I'm very excited. He is co-founder and CEO of Keylapse, and really at the intersection of everything going on with AI and modeling and training. And so welcome, Michael, and why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you. Yeah. Hi. Yeah. I'm Michael Abramoff, co-founder and CEO of Keylapse. Keylapse is data annotation platform, data labeling platform. So I guess when we're going to have more questions, I'm going to tell what that exactly means. I'm software engineer in my blood. I'm also a studio photographer in my past. I don't know what else I can tell about myself.
Yeah, great. So like, what is the future of data creation? And you hear about multimodal data sets and synthetic data. And like, what are the trends in data generation and labeling that kind of excite you? And where do you think things are going in the next 5 years with AI companies along those lines?
Oh, yeah, that's actually an amazing question. So data generation is my favorite subject because we have lots of data today that we cannot process. And we could think about it like, oh, we have so much data that we didn't process yet. Then why would we need to generate more data? Why do we need to collect more data from the real world scenarios? Why would we need to do that? Let's first complete processing the data we have. And the question is that all of the models, everything, all the whole AI thing is dependent on data, but the data is different, right? And you can't just rely on some specific data. Let's say, okay, let's speak about self-driving cars. So you have, Tesla's driving, like full self-driving capabilities. They drive on our streets and without the intervention of a driver. How do they know whether they can turn right or left, or whether the traffic light is red or green, etc., or recognize people, recognize other objects on the road? So we collected some data from our roads. We labeled it and we gave it to the model and we trained the model. But what if we go to the other country? What if we go to Japan, right? What if we go to England where the cars are driving from the other side? Or what if we go to Montreal in Canada and their traffic lights are not vertical, they're horizontal? So these little things that are different might break the whole concept, right? And the model might not recognize what it sees and it might make more mistakes. So you want to train your model on not only on big amounts of data, you want to train models on different data. So you want diversity in the data and you want to have all of this data. And it sounds like an easy task, right? Because you can just go and say, okay, I'm going to collect data from different countries, cities. And at the end of the day, when I'm going to have it, it's not that difficult, right? You just call your friends in different countries and ask them to put dash cam in their cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bring data from their places, right? But then in 1-2 years, suddenly your model again will not perform really well. Why? What happened? So what happened is that the environment has evolved, right? The cars changed their outfit. They had some facelifts. People maybe change their fashion. Even such a thing like people's fashion. You are wearing this t-shirt today. In 2-3 years, you might wear other t-shirts or maybe not t-shirts, something else, because it's going to be more fashionable. It's going to be in the stores. And when we trained our computer vision models to recognize people, we were recognizing people with previous clothes, colors, materials, etc. And even the material matters because Let's say this is cotton and it reflects light in a specific way. If all the people will wear other material clothes, the light might be reflected in a different way. Or even there is a new material for asphalt. Asphalt is always being modified to be more, you know, rain protected, more, I don't know, weather, climate protected, etc., be more sustainable in different ways. So when the chemical compound of it changes, it might reflect the light in a different way. And that might make computer vision model work worse than it was when it was trained. So the environment evolves, everything evolves, you have to gain new data all the time.
And like, how does your platform help that? Because like, it's not easy to get data sets from other countries, or are you talking about fashion, material, every texture, everything changing? And like, how does your platform help with that? Because do you help generate synthetic data, variations?
So we don't. We have partners that do that. Our platform is built for data labeling. It's not for... We do data generation and data creation and collection. And I will give you a little explanation about the difference between three of these. But the platform overall helps you label the data, helps you mark all the objects on the data sets and use it for training purposes. Now, we do have partners and they do interesting things. But first, let me explain the three ways of gaining the data. Number one is collecting it from the internet. So imagine you want to know how products on the shelves in different supermarkets look like. So you don't have to go to these supermarkets in life. You maybe can collect the data from YouTube. So you just go to YouTube and you download, if you can legally do that, you download the thousands of videos how people go to grocery stores, and they might review some things or doing walkthrough or whatever they do. There are other cases when people fly their drones over fields of agriculture or something, and then you can use it for drone footage for different stuff. So this is data collection. So the data will be half legal, I would call it, like gray area legal, to use for training, maybe for testing. It's gonna be good, not for production. And also it's gonna be low quality because you don't know who filmed it, you don't know what was, like how did they film it, what was the quality and the lens parameters, the camera parameters, etc. So that's the cheapest, right? Now, the second option is to create data. So it's like Hollywood. You bring actors, you have scenarios, and you ask actors to perform the scenarios. You also build the studio. So we have a lot of this. We do lots of such things. Especially we do lots of filming of edge cases. So one of our clients, they develop in-cabin analysis. They develop a camera for a car that looks inside the cabin and tries to understand what happens, what distracts the driver from the road. Maybe kids fighting on the back seat, maybe spouse arguing with you, or you're too much in your phone, or maybe you're falling asleep, maybe you're doing all different kinds, you're itching your eyes. So that's a signal, right? That's a signal to the car that something not really well happening. Now they needed to recognize when people will throw up, like people sitting on the back seat will throw up. Now, there is a moment before throwing up when person feels sick. And when you feel sick, it's recognizable. You seem like your face changes, or right? Yeah, your emotions, everything changes. Now, we had to take people in the cars, drive them, you know, through the streets, and wait until they get sick just to film the moment they got sick.
I guess you handpick people have motion sickness or something.
Yeah, we had to find specific people, and the requirements were like, hey, can you find kids? Because kids usually do more of that. Can you find, there should be like women, men, the ethnical distribution should be specific, right? So we can't just bringing some men or women and film them. We have to find very specific people and in huge amounts. I would say like thousands of people, right? So it's a huge operation. It's lots of logistics. Lots of, you have to sign people under consents, and then there are lots of problems, like how do you pay these people?
That sounds very expensive. Is the all that work worth the output?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty. Data is expensive overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever you say data, it's expensive. It's just, It's just a question of like how expensive it is, right?
Yeah.
And then you have the cheapest, like cheapest data, which is synthetic data. That was your like first question that I didn't answer. So how like the generated data or synthetic data, and that's the cheapest by far. But there are issues with that because you might have a lot of it, but it's not real. You don't know, you can train your model with that and you can bring your model to a specific amount of precision, right? But then when you want to get, like in the autonomous driving world, you want to have precision of 99.99999% of, how to say, true answers, like we call it true positive. And so you can, let's say with the synthetic, you can maybe get to 90 or maybe 92%. Precision, but then you will improve it on real data.
Is that usually your path for synthetic data, or you either have data plus synthetic data and then
then usually you should combine. Usually our clients combine, and we do have partners. I just spoke with them a couple days ago, really nice guys. So what they did, they don't just generate synthetic data for you, but they do it from different directions. They say, okay, what are you missing? So you already developed your model, you already trained your model, and your model recognizes everything except green cars, or I don't know, except Porsche cars. Why? Because Porsche, they have a little bit different design, they have the other pattern of the lights, or maybe I don't know what else, maybe they use different paint so it reflects different, I don't know, but I'm just saying it's just an example. So they will recognize where your model performs worse, and then they will generate just that part of data that will improve that specific thing. And they work a lot with manufacturing, they work a lot with aerial filming of agricultural fields, etc.
Yeah, so now, is your platform mainly around video, or is it more than just video?
Yeah, so actually Keylabs is a video and images data labeling platform. We will be introducing 3D LiDAR annotation next year, 3D point cloud LiDARs that's mainly used in drones and autonomous driving cars. Yeah, and we are looking also to enter into LLM market, ChatGPT and all of this. They also need a lot of labeling.
And LiDAR data, there is so much of it. There's too much of it. Like, how do you solve to just get the data that you need? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, there is lots of companies that have been founded in the last 5 years that their main concept is to refine the right data to use. So people understood 5 years ago, and even before that, but like when I entered the market like 5 years ago, I saw that lots of companies understood that if we don't solve the filtering problem, we will have too much data and most of it will be irrelevant.
Right.
So we're gonna just spend lots of time on nothing. So it's giving full gas on like full acceleration on neutral. So we're going to spend lots of resources, but not going to get anywhere with that. So yeah, lots of companies raised on this problem and they do refinements. It's called data curation, actually.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think there is data curation processes. There are data curation processes for LiDAR as well, for 3D point cloud. Okay.
So how about the origin story for Keymaker? Because I know that you're the CEO now of the tooling and the platform for labeling, but like you guys play a critical role in the AI ecosystem and providing the labeling that powers the models. But what inspired you guys to build the company around data annotation? And like, what was the original problem you guys were trying to solve?
Thank you. That's a good question, actually. So the original problem we've seen was that labeling overall is a labor intense thing to do, but it doesn't require you to be super duper educated professional. Any person who is adequately can distinguish objects on the image and can distinguish things and label them can work in such an industry. And we thought that We have lots of ties with Ukraine. Actually, we are an Israeli company. We are Israeli-based founders. We have lots of ties in Ukraine, and we thought that we could outsource the labeling processes to Ukraine. We did have Israeli clients who came to us initially and said, hey, you have a lot of experience. I mean, to the founders, you have lots of experience in running people's operations. Why won't you do labeling for us? We didn't think about labeling at that time.
What did you say about people separations? What is that?
I mean, our previous experience was with like working with huge teams on different things. So we did other businesses before.
Okay.
I just don't want to dive too much into that. But we knew how to bring 100, 200 people into project and accomplish project from A to Z. So we know how to manage such a huge operation and how to manage bigger projects. So we said, oh, okay, so there is such a thing as labeling. Let us try. We actually went to Ukraine. We hired people. We built the software here in Israel just to do the labeling kind of thing. And so we provided the platform. We provided the software to our Ukrainian employees, and they began using it, and the whole process became so much easier. They began doing it really quick, really well. Because it's not just like Photoshop where you go and you mark. You need to have some assistance tools. When you want to label like 10 objects in one click, you need some assistive tools, sometimes AI assistive tools, sometimes some automations, etc. So Killabs gives that all. By the way, that's why lots of companies who do labeling, they use Killabs today.
So it's speed. Yeah, just you built productivity tools for the speed of labeling something visual on the screen.
Speed and quality, yeah. It's mostly, okay. We mostly were worried about velocity because time is money. Most of these companies charge per hour. And then if you can, in 1 hour, if you can do 10 like label 10 objects or label 1,000 objects, it's the price changes drastically.
Yeah, that's interesting too. Like velocity and speed is important, but you talked about data quality. Like what's like the data quality moat, because everyone talks about AI model architecture and compute, but not enough about data quality. And like, how is that a strategic differentiator? And what's your philosophy around turning high quality annotation into a competitive moat?
So yeah, that's an amazing question, because quality was our first priority, always was our first priority. Velocity was second. And how do we do? So we have a lot of QA cycles. And we have lots of automatic QAs, like automation tests, etc., that you can run on the platform, and the platform can by itself recognize different behavioral patterns and signal red flags where the problem, like the quality problem, can come from. But this is a funny fact that we are one of the most expensive companies in the world, like in terms of labeling, and we still have lots of clients. We have 12 Fortune 500 clients. And that's because they come to us for quality, mostly.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, they rarely think a lot about velocity when they understand that quality is much more important. Now, I think it's important to say what does quality mean, if you allow me.
Sure.
Yeah, quality might mean many things, and it's you might say it's a very subjective term, but our clients, when they come to train their model, then they test their model in real world scenarios, right? And let's say, again, if I can come back to the autonomous driving examples, when the car drives, it should know where the lane is, so it stays in the lane, right? So the better it understands where the lane is, the higher quality was the data. So we know all of these aspects, and we know, like, in the instructions we get from the client, we build together instructions, actually. So in these instructions, we define very precisely what quality means, and we always define it in such a way that it's going to be understandable by the team of labelers, right? Because sometimes you might ask for something, but people will not get it. Because they're not experts in your field, they might not know what you mean. So there is a lot of problems in these areas that we found the ways to solve.
Yeah, that's good. And then you talked about, or we talked about synthetic data, or you talked about, okay, we use automation and AI to help with the labeling. And how far can automation go, like, before humans are still indispensable?
Yeah, so many companies try to push it to the usage of automation to like more automation, make it cheaper and cheaper, the data labeling and the data acquisition. But many of them fail, and then they say, oh, fine, okay, so we're gonna just use the 80% of automated things, and then the 20% still will go to real people. Yeah, it depends. It's still not, I don't have one specific number. In some cases, I could say, let's say in agriculture, you could have more of automation, because in agriculture, you might have like the tomato leaves, and they won't change over the course of 10, 20 years, how they look like and stuff like that, or facial recognition. So your emotions will not change within 10 years, or how the patterns of your skin and eyes and everything look like when you show your emotions. That will not change. So in these areas, you can automate more. You can do more of auto labeling and then higher precision training, etc. But in the cases of like autonomous vehicle or drones, where everything changes every day, and they can fly in the desert, or they can fly over the forests, or they can fly over the forest but with fire, which is a different forest, right? Or even you would be amazed, but even a forest in the summer and forest in the end of the summer, they look different. Not just because of the color of the leaves, the soil will have more or less water, and it will reflect the light differently.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gonna have different color, and everything changes then. So yeah, so all of these environmental kind of things, you can automate less of them. You will have to do
Yeah,
more.
that's crazy. People like me, or probably a lot of people, don't even think about that, how the same environment can change so much in visual data. You need to do that. It just made me think, can you infer things, or do you have to like have data to train it on? Dry soil, wet soil, rainy.
Sometimes you can infer. Sometimes you can say, okay, we're gonna simulate dry land and then wetland, and then some more cases like after snow, before snow, I don't know what. And then you can run on this data, you can play with it, and if you see really good results, you're the winner. Like, really good job. Take your prize. Okay? But you don't know. You don't know. And in many cases, it won't work. In some cases, it won't work. I have a friend, he actually runs a very, very interesting company. They try to evaluate how much wood does have a specific wear in the forest. So that if you want to go and chop the woods, you're going to know what is the volume of woods you're going to have at the end of the day. So they fly the drone through the woods, and they measure volume of every stem. You can imagine that? It's crazy,
That
right?
seems too much. It seems like too much, too detailed.
It's too detailed, right? But you can imagine, you just fly a drone over a forest, and you know exactly how much volume of woods you're gonna get from it. Now, even he cries about things that change over the climate, and how the temperature will give him like 20% difference or how much water did the trees drain from the soil, and then they will look different, and it's gonna be, yeah. So you don't know, you never know whether you're gonna succeed or not with this.
Yeah, it does come down to that, like how accurate your models and predictions are. And there's,
Yeah.
you just don't think about the variability of all of these things. I guess that's why you need more and more data. And I guess you get that feedback. I guess, what happens? So a customer hires you, you give them some really good quality data, they train their models, and then how do they know they need more data or different kind of data? Like, is that
Yeah,
trial and error, or like, how's that work?
they know it because they have their clients too, right? They are not the final. Our clients are not the final product developer. They usually have their clients or their use cases that they try to solve. So they can see that their product doesn't work. The
Just
guy,
customer feedback. It's just.
yeah, people who develop drone that has to understand how much your construction progressed from the last day. They do it, and then they do it in the United States, in, I don't know, in Idaho, and then they want to do it in New York, and they come to the New York client, and they say, hey, run demo for us, and they run demo, and it works much worse than it used to work in other city. And they understand that the whole environment has changed and the model doesn't perform as well as it performed at the other place. So they call us again and say, hey guys, we have new data for you to label.
Yeah.
And that happens all the time, all the time.
I'm sure that happened. That's just very iterative and follow-on work.
We work with 5 automotive brands, luxury brands. You know them. Everybody in the world knows these brands. We work with them on a daily basis, and they call us once in 2-3 months, and they say, hey, we have a new data for you. And it's super different from anything you have seen ever from us before. Super different.
And is like, it really?
Yes. And we're like,
how like, can you give an example? Like, well, like, what's the first data set look like? And what's
so
the
we have one brand. I can't say tell the name, but very luxury brand from Germany. Actually from England, but they are acquired by German company, and they look at the cracks on the road. I think they are building some cracks avoidance system, or I don't know what. I don't know what the use case is, but they look into the cracks and they just send us new data from the other place where the cracks are different, and they're different because of the different climate conditions.
So that's similar though. Isn't that similar? Or they feel like that's a totally different data
set? Not at all, because in some cases, that's similar for you and me as a consumer, because crack is crack, right?
Yeah,
but the
yeah.
question is, how do you label it? The question is, how does the model recognize it? Because the crack might be, is it just crack that has to be fixed? Is it something that if I step in there with my wheel, the wheel will just jump and do, you know, really bad things to the car? Is it, I mean, there are lots of different, is it water crack? Is it something else? The car's behavior depends on it. And it's usually, I can't explain, but in the instructions, we have to do different kind of things with them. We have to mark them as wider crack, more narrow, more deep. There's lots of parameters.
That's a lot of precision, but I guess that's what it takes to keep improving and having quality. So like, here's like maybe a sort of a leadership question, because you sit right, like data, AI, you talk about global operations, like what leadership lessons have you learned, like building out your platform, working with your customers, that you can give to other CEOs scaling an AI data-driven company?
So personally myself, I saw lots of scaling problems, like scaling leadership problems. And by scaling, I mean, we had to grow like 3 to 5x year over year in terms of people resources, like human resources. And that was super hard given that you don't have enough management and you need some management layer to manage all of that. So many people were promoted into management from the other layers, right?
Yeah.
From the teams. And then you have to find out the way to consolidate all of these managers, right? So you have to train them to think alike, have specific ideas that the company shares and in the corporate culture, etc. So these moments were really hard, and I'm very proud to say that we used lots of AI to solve these problems.
Really?
Yes.
I wouldn't have guessed that. So yeah, tell me.
Yeah, so we created courses. But the courses were not just LMS. Here is the presentation. Just go over slides 1, 2, 3, etc. We used AI we trained AI with our concepts. And then we created an agent that would go and train every person. It would fit itself to your pace. And it would adapt to your level of understanding of things. So if you struggle to understand some specifics, it's going to repeat, it's going to simplify the language, it's going to try to make sure you got it, make sure you know how to work
great.
With it. Yeah, so we did lots of these kinds of things. We also did some many...
Can I ask you like a follow-up question? So that's really great. Is it like first teach a concept and then you ask questions of the student, based on that you simplify and repeat? Is that how
because it's interactive, we don't even have to ask you questions. So the agent behaves in an interactive way. So I don't have to ask you, did you understand, or what did you understand, etc. I have just to be in talking to you, and I as an agent, and I will understand whether you got it or not.
Okay, so conversationally, you you drill into how they retained the information.
Yeah.
And then, so there's really no testing, but there's a teaching. Do they have to read something first, or the agent teaches them? Or
agent teaches them, and at the end of the day, they will have a first day of labeling, and then they will have more questions. But they will speak to the agent and ask the agent, "Hey, I have this question or it didn't work for me or something else. And the agent will identify the weaknesses and know how to address it. Yeah, it's a separate startup, I would say.
Yeah, that's amazing because, okay, that's a common error people make. I have to scale my team. I can't find managers. They don't really get our culture. Yeah. Let's promote an individual contributor. And then a lot of times that doesn't work out. But how long did it take you from, so you had to build the agent, and then how long did it take you to shake it out where you're like, okay, yeah, this works. Now we can like...
To be honest, weeks or a couple months. It's not...
That's fast. I mean,
yeah, with today's, as I said, I'm software engineer in my blood, right? And the other founders as well. So with the pace of today's tools, AI tools, man, you can do whatever you want. You can build startups in weeks, like working startups, making money startups in weeks.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, you can do crazy. I remember when we did things like tens of like people in half a year and 8 months and years. Today, I just do it in a couple of hours with the help of...
So what's your tech stack or what's your tool stack look like?
So my personal tech stack is C++ and Python, as I'm more like mathematician and more...
I love it, man.
Academical kind of...
Love C and C++. That, like, I'm older. I love C and C++, but love it.
So you're also a software engineer, right?
Yeah.
Your background, yeah. That's amazing, right? Because... it doesn't matter what you do in your life. You do podcasts, you're CEO, you're a photographer. Doesn't matter what you do. You always bring this software engineering mindset to every single thing, like how you make coffee, right? I program my machine to do different stuff, right?
I may not go to that level, but I respect that level.
Yeah. Or how do I take
it? I interrupted you. What is your tech stack like?
My tech stack?
You said, oh, I used to have a team of 10 and 8 months later we'd ship a product.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
So for building agents, it's NADN or make.com for agents. But today OpenAI just a week ago just announced their own agent builder. And I think we're going to move to it because we do lots of use of OpenAI's APIs and tools, etc. There is lots of spreadsheet AI tools. Like Clay, and now Google gave their own AI integration into spreadsheets, which is amazing, I would say. So all of this like tabular. So it's mainly, you almost don't write the code. Even if I'll tell you, we write it in Python. No, I just ask AI to write it in Python. And then I fix some code if there is problems. But yeah, okay. you build agents with agent building platforms like NADN.
Okay, good.
That's a stack.
And, yeah, I started off a long time ago. I'm going to be 62 this month. But I started writing software when I was 16 and way back when DOS. But we wrote one of the first C and C++ code generators for Borland.
Really?
Even before Microsoft even had a C++ compiler.
Wow. Anyway,
I was just thinking back. It was like Zortec and Borland. Zortec was out of Canada. And there was only a few compiler companies that could do C++. And so generating C and C++ code. Like, yeah, 36 years ago.
Oh, my God.
But anyways, I was just thinking
I couldn't imagine code generators back then.
Yeah, we were building code generators. And yeah, the world certainly changed since then. But you just made me remember or reflect. But so, yeah, this has been really interesting for me to hear what you and your team does. What question didn't I ask that, I really want to share this point of view with the audience?
I don't know. I think you asked all of it. And if you were more interested in data, etc. So I think you did ask it in the other way, like what data does make sense? Because we have so much data in this world. And with more and more devices, we have more and more data. Because all of these devices, they just collect more data and they store it. So what data does make sense and what will make sense in the future? And maybe that kind of question. And I would say that we don't know. We don't know yet. So in my opinion, we have to collect, the more data we collect, the better. And we should think about the collect now, process later concept, where we say, hey, in 10 years, in 20 years, in 50 years, we will have enough compute power to process all the data we have today in minutes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, and maybe this data will be valuable in the future. So the concept of store now, process later is a very much...
Yeah, that's a good concept.
Valuable concept for me.
Yeah. I have one last question because I'm curious. So I'm a gamer, and so I'm hearing now, oh, people are building out this AI for video gaming, and I guess they always have, but what's the future? Like, I don't know if this is even your what you guys do or what you do, but like, what are they building? What's the future of AI in video gaming?
Oh, wow. You opened Pandora box here. So think about it. The world you're playing in today is pre-generated, right? You don't know. You always know where all these rooms are or the fields and everything. Now think about it. If AI would dynamically generate the world with your story, and so if you, I don't know, if you killed the witch, then AI will decide what's gonna happen, but it's gonna decide what's gonna happen for you, like specifically, because I don't know, you have different preferences than I do. And even if I kill the same witch and you kill the same witch, we will not have same scenarios after that milestone, right?
Okay. So
Because
it's
AI would.
unique game playing and
Yes. So
storytelling and
uniqueness in gameplay and storytelling, and then the NPCs. We all suffer from stupid, dumb NPCs today. These are all these people you speak to in the, or not people, all these objects you speak to in the games that they give you loot, they give you some, I don't know, swords and stuff. And they're
yeah.
usually very dumb. They have all predefined messages that they have to tell you, and then you can choose your.
Oh, I got what you're talking about. Yeah, all these pre-canned conversations. Yeah.
Yeah, and also in some cases, like in some games like shooters, you have NPCs that run with you. So you are in a SWAT team and you go and shoot, and then six other people, like people, NPCs, go and shoot together with you. Now imagine if all of these NPCs would be AI driven. They
Yeah.
wouldn't be programmed ahead of
Ahead of
time,
time.
they would dynamically adapt to your gameplay. And in my opinion, that would be amazing.
So
Amazing.
I guess that you create relationships with your AI team is probably one good outcome. And right? And then you start gelling as a team how you're gonna go about whatever challenge is ahead of you.
And you can talk to them, you can plan with them, you can go beyond the programmed scope of
Yeah, it's
this.
more real world. It's more real world. Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
Takes you to like more realistic
Scenarios.
scenarios.
Yeah,
But
that's
on the
awesome.
other hand, it's scary, right? Because our kids will grow into that world. So we don't
Yeah, when will that start hitting the market? When will that start happening? Battlefield Slick 6, Call of Duty 7, those are okay, but not even close to what you just said.
I think it's gonna happen pretty soon, because we just had this five, I would even say 3 years of LLMs evolving. So we began with ChatGPT 2 or 3.5. I don't remember which one was the first public version, right? There were lots of it before, but we didn't, like, we as a world, we didn't know about all of these things. Maybe some specific professionals knew about LLMs. I knew about it from like 2015 because we worked on such projects, but the world didn't think about GPTs, right? So we just think about it for the last 3 years. It's too young. We're in the beginning, and we already have this GPT-5, which is pretty smart. And I would say 2 more years, like 2, 3 more years, when we're gonna have better. And it's not about the quality now, it's about the inference time, like how quick the LLM can answer and not
Yeah, have no
consume
latch.
too much power from the power
Yeah.
stations. That's the main
Power
question today.
and yeah, power and lag, and because you don't want to wait in real time.
Right, because the quality of the answers is already satisfactory plus.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
It's about the consumption now.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed chatting with you, Michael. This was
If
interesting. So if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
people want to get in touch with me personally, my email is michael.a@labsai, but our website is killabsai. You can find us there. My LinkedIn, Michael Abramov. There is lots of Michael Abramovs, but the one who is doing data labeling is myself.
Yeah, you're labeled with the AI. Yeah.
And I'm super open. I answer all the communications. I have 4,000 people in connection, and most of them chat with me at some point of time and I answer. So I'm very responsive kind of person. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it, Michael.
Thank you, Dean. Amazing, amazing podcast. Thank you. We're going to listen to it. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data-Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.